Councillors and staff, being the witching hour at 6 o'clock. So good evening and welcome to our meeting tonight. Before I begin, I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land in which we meet today and pay our respects to elders past, present, future. Thank you. Visitors tonight, we've got Mr. Lindsay Broadhurst presenting in person and Mr. Max Berger and Ms. Tammy Mitchell from Main Roads attending on Microsoft Teams behind me, and they will be providing a presentation on 8.1. Apologies and leave, Mr. CEO. We have Councillor O'Connor is an apology, and Councillor Sewell is taking his place. Councillor Sutherland has sent her apologies in very late for the meeting. Councillor Ostaszewski is an apology tonight and deputising is Councillor Johnson. Councillor Jeans is an apology and deputising is Councillor Ciccini. Is there anyone else? We're all here. Okay. And we do have a couple of phonics. Councillor Kylie's in the back deputising. Oh, deputy, sorry. Thanks for coming. Leave of absence. Is there any leave of absence? No? Nobody want to go anywhere anytime soon? Well, you can't. No. I'm on to it. So the disclosure of interest, we have two of them tonight. So we have from one from Marcus and one from Angela. So just so you know, that is the case. Announcements by the chairman, there are nil from me. Response to previous public questions taken on notice, there are nil. Public.
In terms of the nature of that
No, I can. Well, I can tell that. It's in relation to the facilitator of the CEO performance review. That's Marcus. So he's got to declare an interest because it's an item about himself. That is, yeah. And Angela Wollstonecroft is the manager of human services, a trick. So she's got a impartiality affecting that decision. Public question time. There are no members of the public.
No, no members of the public.
Great. So I've already done the leave of absence. Nobody is there. Petitions and presentations and deputations. So 8.1. is we're on to the main roads. So you're doing the introduction?
Yeah, so we'll invite Lindsay. I understand we have two of your team members online for moral support, and Lindsay will give us an overview on EastLink and what's happening in the eastern region with infrastructure and bridges and rail maybe. Thank you, Lindsay.
Thanks very much.
I'm going to pop myself here so I can see what's going on.
Everyone hear me? Yep, that's good. Yeah, no, thanks again for the opportunity. I'm going to sort of provide a bit of an overview of a couple of other sort of main roads projects in the MRC area and a couple of other proposals or planning sort of proposals that we're working on in the area or the immediate surrounds. The EastLink team is going to then provide an overview or an update on the EastLink project, the planning and development. So I've got about five or six or seven slides. I'll sort of run through those and then hand over to the EastLink team. First one I wanted to just provide an update on is that Main Roads has undertaken what we've termed a future roads project, which has identified a number of roads that, you know, are likely to be transferred to become state roads in the future. There hasn't been, up until recently, there hadn't been any transfer of state roads, at least in the metropolitan area, since the early 90s. So, you know, from a main roads perspective, this was a long overdue initiative. So there was a review undertaken a couple of years ago, included input from local government, Walga, and identified a list of potentially 15 or 20 roads across the metropolitan and Peel area that would potentially warrant become state roads or main roads in the future. A number of those occurred last year, sort of a few of the obvious ones that have sort of developed quite rapidly over the last sort of 10 to 15 years. The northern extent of Marmion Avenue from Ocean Reef up to Yanchep Beach Road, that was transferred last year, sort of after it was fully duplicated to up to Yanchep. Ocean Reef Nangarra Road, that was transferred last year as well. Obviously, a section of that is in the City of Swan in the MRC area. And also Curtin Avenue, which was just really the existing Curtin Avenue through Cottesloe, which even though it sort of performs a regional road function, it was up until recently a local government road. So there's a number of others that have been identified to become or potentially become sort of local or become state roads in the future. We've identified a number that are probably in the next few years sort of that are more than likely to meet those warrants. Thomas Road, the very eastern section of Thomas Road down near Byford, is one of those that's likely to occur in the next one to two years. And we're trying to identify sort of some of those warrants by triggers that are happening elsewhere around the network. We've got there's funding for the extension of Tonkin Highway. So we thought that was a trigger that, you know, timing-wise, and there's been a lot of development in Byford to transfer Thomas Road. A couple of other potential ones that are likely to occur in the next 2 to 3 years is Abernathy Road, sort of up to the Greaterton Highway bypass, with the bypass project sort of almost underway. I think some early works has progressed on site. That's likely to be a trigger to consider that sort of becoming a state road in the shorter term, and also potentially the North Lake Road, sort of down in the Coburn area, the Armidale to North Lake Road bridge project has been completed. The western part of North Lake Road is one that we'll be looking at in the shorter term. Just a couple of just want to touch base on a couple of other projects occurring in the EMRC other than East Link. The initial site works have commenced for the Great Eastern Highway bypass interchanges projects, which includes the construction of interchanges at the Abernathy Road Lloyd Street on the bypass, and also the Row Highway, Greaterton Highway bypass interchange. Also includes upgrading of Row Highway, duplication of the bridge over the Herolina River, which will provide sort of three lanes from the Clayton Street, where it is currently three lanes down to just south of the bypass. The works also include the connection of Lloyd Street into the Hazelmere industrial area, and also includes the completion of Lloyd Street over the Helena River, linking up to the Midland City area. And to the south of the bypass, it includes the upgrading of Abernathy Road down to Kalamunda Road. And one thing that is required as part of the upgrade is the closure of the Stirling Crescent Greaterton Highway bypass intersection. So there's a lot of other associated works, some being undertaken by Main Roads, some being undertaken by the City of Swan, to ensure that the internal networks are able to sort of cater for the redistributed traffic.
Can I just so our Hazelmere site is this site here, right in the middle of it. Yep. That's a good connection. So I resaw a couple of
them. So your works have just commenced. I think there's been some initial, probably can't see a lot from driving along the roads, but some initial site works have commenced. They'll kick off to a sort of greater extent later in 2022. The completion date is still subject to sort of final sort of clearances. It's been delivered by an alliance, so that's enabled early works to proceed. But yeah, the delivery will be, it'll be a 2 to 2.5 year delivery time frame. Just along the road on Greaterton Highway bypass, there's also funding that has been provided for the grade separation of the Kalamunda Road and the Greaterton Highway bypass intersection, and also the replacement of the freight rail bridge on Kalamunda Road over the freight rail, which is under strength. It's only one lane each direction. So both of those upgrades are funded. The planning and development work for those are being undertaken by the Greater Connect Alliance, which is the alliance that's developing and delivering all the works just to the east. And the timing for those is yet to be determined. They've still got to go through quite a planning and development exercise. There's the potential, particularly for the new bridge over the rail, for that to be also delivered by the alliance as part of the Greater St Hilda Bypass Interchanges project. Any questions on those locations? Next major project in the area I wanted to cover was the Tonkin Gap project, which is essentially the completion of upgrading of Tonkin Highway between the previously completed Gateway project and Northlink project. It also includes some significant rail enabling works for the Morley Ellenbrook Rail, sort of further up Tonkin Highway, where the rail sort of comes in. That's essentially additional sort of bridging over the Swan River, and significant upgrading to the Guildford Road sort of road interchange, and some additional sort of loop ramps at the Greater St Hilda Bypass interchange. That works, as most people would know, sort of been underway for sort of quite a period now, due for completion in late 2023. The other ones I just want to provide a quick update on are some other planning activities happening in and around the EMRC area. The Orang Road, sort of main roads, complete a planning review a couple of years ago for the section from Greater St Highway through to just south of Leach Highway. That went through quite a consultation process, and land has been included in a planning control area to protect the additional land that's required for that upgrading. Government has provided some funding, not for construction, but to progress the development work. So has allocated, I think it's $20 million to Main Roads to progress that work, to get it, get all the development work progressed. And we have also in our planning area commenced a further review of the planning for Orang Road, extending down to Roe Highway and all the way down to Tonkin Highway, to complete that sort of a link, southeastern sort of connection of Orang Road through to Roe Highway and Tonkin Highway. The Whiteman Yanchep Highway, just to get your bearings, this is Nangara Road here. Tonkin Highway is just over to the east, sort of, or north link. The Whiteman Yanchep Highway has been identified as a requirement for many, many years to support the extensive development, urban development, industrial development in the East Wanneroo area. The planning was completed for that a number of years ago, and it was provided as input to the East Wanneroo District Structure Plan. That's now been approved and supported by the West Australian Planning Commission, and now we'll be seeking to progress the planning so that we can progress that to an MRS amendment now that the district structure plan's been approved. Back on Great Eastern Highway, back towards Tonkin Highway, we are undertaking a planning review of the section of Great Eastern Highway through sort of Redcliffe near the domestic airport from Tonkin Highway through to Great Eastern Highway. As most would know, there is significant redevelopment proposed in that area, partly around the new train station at near the domestic airport. Current planning for this route provides for significant widening and upgrading to a six-lane at grade solution with significantly upgraded intersections, similar to Great Eastern Highway through the Belmont area. We're going through a process to review whether that's the current planning is the best option, or whether we should be looking at sort of the alternative options and potentially some form of localised grade separations. That's still in our planning area. Our next steps are really to take that through to once we've formalised our sort of options there, to brief the relevant key stakeholders and decision makers, including the Western Train Planning Commission, and then take it through to stakeholder and community consultation. We're also partway through doing a review of Great Eastern Highway, more in the Midland, the city area, from essentially Roe Highway through to Lloyd Street. There's significant, a lot of redevelopment, a lot of other infrastructure, new station, other changes occurring in the Midland area. The current planning for this section of Great Eastern Highway only provides for the existing four lanes. You know, it's sort of going to be sort of widened with a median and some slightly upgraded intersections. The redevelopment and the growth is showing that that's probably going to be insufficient in terms of capacity. We have developed a concept of potentially upgrading that to six lanes for just that section from Roe through to Lloyd Street. And similarly, our next steps are really to brief some of the key sort of planning decision makers on that and take that out for consultation. That was the end of my slides, but happy to go back and take any other questions on any of those items, or take any other questions relating to main roads issues in the area.
Thank you, Chair. I wish every department had main road superpowers. Can I ask a question, please, about the Tonkin Gap link where you're doing the... Thank you. You showed us that red curvy line where it links the train station to the Morley Ellenbrook line that's linking into Tonkin. Yep. Yeah, that one. Can you update us on where the... that's in my ward. Where the planning is on that?
Where the planning is at, or the construction? Yeah. What's under construction at the moment?
Mm.
And I just checked the recently updated aerial plans, and you know, they're at the moment constructing the parts within the Tonkin Highway Reserve to enable the Morley Ellenbrook Rail to tie in. So there's quite a lot of works happening at this location to allow sort of the rail to go underneath sort of the northbound carriageway of Tonkin Highway. There's significant works that will be happening around the Broon Avenue bridge area, sort of to make a provision for where the station is going to be located. And this project does also include north of Marshall Road. They've actually realigned temporarily a carriageway of Tonkin Highway so they can construct essentially where the rail line is going to come out up north of Marshall Road to access the Malaga station. So all those works have commenced. They're partway through, and by the end of next year due for completion.
Mm. So we haven't seen any detailed planning for that link locally. I'm just wondering where that would be accessible.
In relation to the rail planning, I'd probably have to take that on notice and just find out sort of where that's at from a rail development and delivery. I suppose Main Roads is, being tasked with delivering the rail enabling works within Tonkin Highway to make provision for those connections to come through.
Thank you. Can I ask one more question? Sorry. So since you touched on that, I mean, a lot of that road work, along Northlink is being redone to enable the train line to fit in. I'm just wondering with your other projects if future public transport is being taken into account.
Yes, on some links. I didn't sort of touch on the Whiteman to Yanchep Highway link. We've made provision in the median for rail sort of all the way along that corridor, which, and I suppose our view is that we should maintain that provision because we're still fairly early in the planning stages for that. But the East Wanneroo District Structure Plan actually has a preference for the rail to come out of the road corridor and come through the East Wanneroo sort of district structure plan area. So where there's reasonable certainty over sort of public transport or rail provision, that's absolutely something we factor into sort of the staging and planning of our future infrastructure.
Okay, thank you. My question is a little bit boring, and just relates to some concerns within our community about some line markings on both Kalamunda Road and Welshpool Road East that we're waiting inspectors to come out for. There's inconsistencies in terms of the speed limit of Kalamunda Road, which has been able to maintain a 70 kilometre an hour rate, while on Welshpool Road East, which is normally an 80 kilometre zone, it's been reduced to 60. I'm just wondering why those inconsistencies would exist and why there are delays in terms of getting inspector sign off for those particular works.
Yeah, I'm happy to take those on notice. I'm not sort of familiar enough with each of those locations or issues, but happy to take those on notice. I know sort of there is a sometimes a delay in line marking sort of after works have been undertaken, which I think was partly one of your questions. Sometimes there is a delay of certain length, sort of because you know they try and stage those works to suit sort of the teams that are available to do that. But yeah, I'll have to take those on notice, those specific questions.
Thank you. Just a follow-up question. Welshpool Road East sections of that are the responsibility of Main Roads, and other sections are the responsibility of the City of Kalamunda, which means that there are some inconsistencies around that for residents. And I was wondering whether there was an intent at some point for Main Roads to take on full responsibility for Welshpool Road East.
So I can answer that one. So Orang Road and I suppose Welshpool Road West, I suppose you call it, to Tonkin, is currently a state road. So it's a state road, but you're correct, Welshpool Road East isn't sort of a state road at the moment. So it's a local road, but it has been identified as a potential future state road, more due to its freight function in terms of being the restricted access vehicle route that vehicles use from Brookton Highway to get into the Forestfield sort of Kewdale, sort of Hazelmere area. So that's on the list of potential future state roads, but they've all got to go through their own sort of individual assessment process in a sort of coordinated manner.
Okay.
One more, I think.
This is more a general question in that from our residents, Main Roads tend to collect a bit of criticism in respect to the reinstatement of trees particularly. I do understand that you enter into some offset agreements sometimes, I think with Bayswater, that occurred where some of the trees that were being removed, there was an offset plan for elsewhere. And I do quite commend those sort of plans. But my question is, looking into the future with all of these type of projects, is there a greater awareness of the need to increase the vegetation after these projects have been done? Like, is there a way of actually incorporating greater tree canopy into some of these projects in the future, being aware of the community sentiment that is definitely moving in that direction?
Yeah, I think obviously environmental impacts, vegetation impacts are obviously a significant issue that need to be taken into account. And I suppose, you know, we need to upgrade, widen roads to a certain degree, but we're very much conscious that we need to keep that to a minimum where we can sort of reduce the medium widths, sort of steep and batters to reduce those impacts. They're all the elements that need to be assessed. The EastLink guys might talk about that. I know there's a lot of sustainability groups, sort of discussion sessions, and that covers all of those elements in terms of trying to minimise the footprint of the actual sort of infrastructure that's required, what can be incorporated, what can be included, but also when there are impacts, as you're saying, what's the offset requirement, even though the offset might not be directly adjacent to the area, but there are all those requirements as well.
Okay.
I think it's, you know, it's really admirable the way that the state is doing the sort of multi-purpose sort of approach to major highways and railways, particularly for public transport. I just wonder if there is a similar sort of plan to link up more freight lines, train lines, along with, you know, major highways such as Rohai Highway, for example.
I suppose the freight network is more, I suppose, limited in terms of its extents than the passenger network. There are, you know, there's a couple of freight rail realignments that I'm aware of, you know, down along the in the Mundijong area. The freight rail goes through the Mundijong future urban area, and there's a planning review going on at the moment, which Main Roads is actually undertaking as part of the Tonkin Highway extension to realign that, so it's out of the future, or the current town site and future major urban precinct, and realign that parallel alongside Tonkin Highway, which I think is a good principle to align our infrastructure and services corridor where it's practical to reduce those sort of amenity and severance types impacts. Where there's a freight rail proposed for the Midland area as well, which is in the EMRC area, for a section that follows Greaterston Highway bypass along the northern side, but then it does follow, deviate away from the major road corridors, and I think it follows the military road alignment. So not too sure how familiar the council is on that, but there's a planning control area that's in place for that proposal as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you, Lindsay.
Nice. Thank you. Right. I'll, if it's okay, I'll hang around for the EastLink update as well. Yep.
Sorry, with your indulgence, if I can touch on, Councillor Hamilton's question reminded me of something, if you don't mind. We've lost a lot of canopy in Bayswater because of the Donkin Gap project, an enormous proportion of our canopy. What's the plan to replace that?
As part of the works, I'll have a re-landscaping element to the works. I'm not too sure what's available in terms of to share in terms of the details of that, but yeah, that would be the intent, that, you know, as much as possible, there's, you know, landscaping that occurs along the where those opportunities arise. I'm not sure about what the environmental offset arrangements might be as part of that project, but yeah, obviously down along the corridor and across the Swan River, there would have obviously been significant environmental approvals that had to go through, potentially with some offset requirements as well.
Yeah, I think they're exempted. I'm not unaware of any offset requirements, so how could I find that information out?
I can take that on notice and come back through the MRC to provide a.
That'd be fantastic. That. Thank you.
Marcus, who's delivering this one?
They're online.
All right. Can we ask Max, as the Main Roads Project Director, to kick us off?
Yep. Thanks for having us. So we've got Pork Murphy. He is the Consultant Project Director for the EastLink WA Integrated Project Team. And Timmy Mitchell, she's Community and Stakeholder Engagement Manager. And I'm the Main Roads Project Director for the project. Really quickly, so EastLink WA is currently in the planning and development phase, and it's been through over 40 years of work has been done on the alignment primarily between Road 2G interchange and Collect Line, what's been known as an orange route. As part of the EastLink, as a part of the $20 million funding to progress planning and development, EastLink is really an amalgamation of four separate projects. It's the improvements of the Reed Highway between Tonkin and Great Northern. It's the improvements of the Roe Highway between Great Northern and just south of Great Eastern Highway down to Clayton, which will tie into what Lindsay's just talked to you about the existing project that's being constructed for the Great Eastern Highway Bypass. And we're going to be tying just north of Helena River. Proposed new section of the Perth to Adelaide National Highways, which is what was known as an Orange Route 4 for a number of years, between Road 2J and Great Eastern Highway at Clackline, and also improvements for Great Eastern Highway between Clackline and the town of Northam. So, as I've mentioned, we've got $20 million for planning and development. So far, only construction funding that has been committed is for the three Reed Highway grade separations at Reed Elton, Reed Drumpelia Davy, and Reed Hanley Brook Avenue. Beyond that, there's no construction funding for any of the road highway improvements or the Perth Adelaide National Highway between Perth and Northam. So this slide kind of lays out where the project has been through a lot of work that was done in 70s and 80s. Main roads have come up with a preferred alignment, which was known as an orange route, that was approved in 1988. In 1994, the reservation was set for the orange route in the MRS. And so from 1994 and up until mid-2010s, some work has been done intermittently along the route. Then in 2015 through 2018, some work has been done to update the earlier planning stuff. And in 2020, we've started the planning and development for the overall route to bring it up to the current design standards. So that's the bit that is in darker teal on the screen. So our scope is to update the planning and development, come up with preliminary 15% designs for the entire route, to secure environmental and heritage approvals for the project, and then to come up with a business case so we can present that to the state and federal government so the government can make decisions, decisions about future investment. And all the stuff that you see in gray, that's if the work that we're doing will attract additional construction funding, we will kick into those phases of detailed design and construction operation. Thanks. I will hand this over to Pork, who will run you through some of the technical detail.
Thanks, Max. So along Reed and Roe Highway on the screen, moving from the Tonkin Highway project in the white line on the left-hand side, Reed Highway has been recently upgraded to dual carriageway for that full section, basically from Beechborough along now to the Swan River. We are planning for grade-separated interchanges at Elton, Drumpelia and Henley Brook Ave, West Swan Road. We are doing ultimate planning at this stage, and that ultimate planning is based on a 2051 design horizon. That would look like three lanes in each direction through most of that section of Reed Highway, and freeway network grade separated all the way around to Great Eastern Highway. Some of those sections that we are planning for four lanes on Roe Highway particularly, but that is an ultimate planning horizon, which is typical for projects of this nature. Then we will work through what is the short and medium term, I suppose, project case scenario that would inform that business case that Max just talked about. So,
Lindsay, can you just make put the slide in presentation? It's a little bit small here, if you can make it bigger.
I'll try, Lindsay. Have you guys, is it proper screen now, Lindsay?
That's a lot better, thanks.
No worries, thanks. So we are, where was it? Planning grade separation at the Roe Highway, Great Northern Highway, just to the east of the Swan River. Then we move around to Roe 2J, the existing intersection, which will be the kickoff for Perth Adelaide National Highway. And we're planning for grade separation at Morrison Road and currently investigating connectivity options at Morrison. So basically making this, that last part of that freeway network around Perth metro area. As people are aware, Main Roads has been working on this for a long time in terms of intersections like Reed Malaga, Royal Kalamunda, etc., getting grade separated. This is the last section that needs to be grade separated, getting rid of the traffic lights. So moving into a larger piece of the EastLink IPT scope, we kick off into the rural area. So on the bottom left-hand side is that little map that we just talked about, those grade separations. We are planning for grade separated freeway standard 5 all of the way to Gidgee-Gannup. So interchanges along the way at the representing basically those dots that you see somewhere around Red Hill facilities, and I'll have a map of that later to show a bit more detail. O'Brien Road, Stoneville Reserve, and then 2J Road just to the east of Gidgee-Gannup. From the east of Gidgee-Gannup, we kick off across our Greenfield section, across the north of Warraloo and just to the south of Wundowie, and tying in with Great Eastern Highway just at Clackline. So we do have go around the town side of Bakers Hill, and then we go from Clackline to Northam on the existing alignment. Some of the key features, all of that has been planned as dual carriageway, two lanes in each direction. We are planning for a control of access highway, so removing any driveways that currently connect to 2J Road or Great Eastern Highway on those sections, and having service roads to provide that connectivity back to the highway at controlled locations. This is a bit of a more zoomed in version of the Enroll Highway. We're conscious of time, so we'll get through and allow enough time for questions at the end. The next one is a bit of a zoom in of, I suppose, some of our impacts and closeness to the EMRC waste management facilities. And we have been working with the EMRC technical staff and officers across a number of areas, both in this technical and impacts, but also in sustainability. And I'll talk about some of that work we're doing, talking to Wendy on a few slides time. Here we've got an interchange where the access into the MRC facility would go over the highway with ramp connections on and off the highway. We're still working through the detail of that access road and driveway accesses into the facilities, but currently we've had very good and open positive communications both from our team and from the MRC team. So we don't believe there's any significant issues there, and we'll continue to work together positively on this one. In terms of timing for the EastLink IPT, so we've agreed some dates with Main Roads of our project development complete. So that's when our scope would be completed on these sections. That's not indicating a timing of then moving directly into those grey bars, which Max talked about, procurement and construction, etc., because a lot of these sections, particularly areas 3, 4, and 5, are unfunded. The only things funded are areas 1 and 2. But that is to, I suppose, manage our own scope and expectations about when our consultancy services finishes and when there's logical points to hand over to the next phase, whatever that might look like. A bit on our own program. So we've been running since January last year now, just over 12 months. Time flies when you're having fun. We have been driven a lot of our work by the environmental approvals process. So in discussions with Main Roads and our project steering committee, we've agreed to target having environmental approvals for Row Highway to Clackline in place by the middle of 2024. So that sits areas 4 and 5. Unfortunately, my pointer's not working, but basically from there, we're allowing 2 years to get environmental approvals. So we need to start the environmental approval process with the regulators in the middle of 2022. That's the two blue stars that you see lined up vertically on the page. So to allow that, we've then had to do spring surveys this year, which is the first blue bar on the left-hand side that you see. And then before that, we had to go through a notice of entry process under the Lands Administration Act to gain access to land. So a lot of our processes are driven by that environmental approval process of getting that in place. In total, will probably take 3 to 3.5 years. A little bit on our sustainability, and Main Roads is running through the ISC planning rating. We are running a first in Australia, getting a planning rating for project development of this scale, which is quite exciting and interesting. One of our first steps to do that was to go through a materiality assessment and develop some focus areas. I won't run through all of this, but basically our focus areas are around how do we minimize the footprint of this infrastructure, how do we protect the environment in the project area, how do we value the people in place, recognizing the social and amenity value of the land and where we are, how do we design for the future, bearing in mind some of this is unfunded and technology is moving with electric vehicles, artificial intelligence, etc., so being aware to that. And how do we leverage, I suppose, economic development? Projects of this scale will bring great opportunities. Two things, I suppose, where we are working with Wendy and the MRC team, and I see a lot of opportunities, is around, I suppose, that minimizing the footprint. And that's not just the physical footprint, but that is where do we get our materials, what materials there is opportunities to reuse, and I suppose construction and demolition waste, recycled timber, mulch, etc. There's all opportunities to reuse materials such as what you guys are receiving through FOGO, etc. So all of those, we're exploring those opportunities, and we've actually got the benefit of time to realise some of those opportunities that fast track delivery jobs don't usually allow. And the last one in the circle at the bottom is determining ways to enable capacity for building for individuals and businesses. So what are industries, what are skill sets that we can leverage off this project to build those skills, and also being mindful that EMRC, as having a significant facility as a neighbour to the project, there may be opportunities to build those capacity for individuals and businesses with Main Roads and EMRC working closely together. The last one on sustainability before I hand over to Tammy is just to share a bit of information. We have done a preliminary life cycle assessment of the whole of the project. This is really to show our focus areas on our, I suppose, CO2 footprint. We're working through these early metrics. This is based on a reference design, so it's baselining where we are. What I would highlight is things like on the right-hand side, our area 4 and 5, the large blue box or rectangle is actually operational lighting, which can be a bit of a surprise, but when you look at the whole of life of the project, it actually shows us a focus of not just trying to reduce the materials that we construct in, but how can we actually have more efficient lighting over the whole of the project lifecycle? So interesting tools. We are sharing them continuously through our sustainability advisory group, which some of our local authority and AMRC partners are on, and through a number of other reference groups that we've got. With that, I'll hand over to Tammy.
Thank you, Park. Yes, thank you. As Park mentioned, we've been going for approximately 12 months, and during that time we've been doing a lot of work in the community and stakeholder engagement space to inform the project team around the issues, concerns and aspirations that our stakeholders in the community have. You'll see on screen that we have three local government authorities that the project traverses, and a neighbouring local government being the Shire of 2J. And spread across that geographical footprint, we've held a number of activities, whether they be advisory groups or forums or briefings or drop-in sessions for the community, even agricultural shows, where we've taken the project team out into the community to allow the community to have access to information. Projects of this size and scale have a lot of public interest. Obviously, there's the interest for those directly affected through private land. You note on screen that we have 312 landowners that are directly involved in our investigation corridor. That's not to say that each of those properties will be affected by the footprint of the highway, but they are within our investigation area for the environmental referral process that Porrick spoke of earlier. So in recognition of that interest, we have had quite an active presence in the community, and to date we've heard from more than 1,000 local landowners, residents and visitors through those means to share with us their views and aspirations. One of the community engagement forums that we have open at the moment is on the MySay Transport Engagement Forum. It was launched in the 25th of January. It is an interactive map. A little snapshot there on right of screen showing where we are advising and sharing with the community our local access strategy. So where we propose to have access on and off the highway, noting that PORIC has made reference that this will be a control of access highway, that means for some residents there will be changes in their existing movements and patterns. There is also a community survey where we are checking in with the community about their views on the project, what things are important to them, what things concern them, what things we already know, and potentially if there are things that we don't yet know about the community. Those two forums are open until next Monday, the 28th of February. We'll take that feedback on board and that will help inform the next phase of the map, which will be launched in April, showing a lot more detail about the shape and form and configuration of the intersections, interchanges, service roads, kept track, etc. In terms of community feedback, what we've heard so far, very typical for a project of this size and scale. People are concerned about the environment, about cultural heritage, road safety, noise and visual amenity. For particularly out in the Orange Route, they're concerned about the rural character and the impact on social surrounds, but that is also an issue for people within the Swan Valley Tourism Precinct. Very topical is the bushfire preparedness, particularly with planning for emergency events, egress and access. And as PORIC mentioned, there are a number of alignments of the highway that are either to the north or to the south of existing townships. So there is some concern from local businesses about whether that redistribution of traffic would have an impact on their trade. One of the biggest issues that is unique to this project is the impact on the KEP track. It's a 75-kilometre trail that goes from the Perth Hills in Mundaring out to Northam. There are short sections of that track that will intersect or cross over the alignment, and we are starting forums with stakeholders and user groups to talk about how we could perhaps minimise those impacts and work with them to preserve the functionality and character of that trail. In terms of the community's appetite for further information, as always, they're looking for detail on the alignment, the alternate options that have been considered, what those connections forms will be, what impacts that will be on the local network, and specifically what property impacts that will have through either acquisition or through exposure to noise and visual amenity. That next level of detailed information is what we're still working on. As you saw from the program, this project is a three-year undertaking, and that's because we understand the complexities of the project and the intricacies of making sure that what we design, what we take to the community is robust and is a long-term solution. So as I mentioned, in April, there will be the next round of information available for the community. That's all that we had to present to the council, but we're happy to take questions from you on any of the group that we've just shared with you.
Yes, just a question, if you can hear me okay, in relation to light pollution and astrotourism and things like that. I noticed it wasn't mentioned on your slide 16. So the main roads generally put in, according to the Australian standards, which I hope will be reviewed, because you put far too many lights in and it's far too polluting. Have you thought about the impact, or has that come up in the conversation that you've had with the community about light pollution in this project?
Yep. Well, I might start and Tammy can add to it, or Max. Yes, it has come up quite a few times in some of the drop-in sessions we've had, and community members have raised that. At this stage, we haven't started to look at the lighting extent, but we'll look at that as part of the project. I know we will also need to consider as part of our environmental approvals in terms of where the lighting is and what the lighting levels are. I suppose one thing I would say, and is the lighting design is moving on, which is good. And I suppose there's more of a move away from the high pressure sodium lights to more LED fitting, which is more, I suppose, has got more options in terms of directionality and reducing light spill. So we are looking at some of the latest technologies in terms of LED of where we do need lighting, but we haven't started to look at where we need lighting. Does that make sense?
I'll just add to that, Porik, that the slide 16 that we were showing is, the top categories that have been raised with us. It's not an exhaustive list. The community definitely has raised the dark sky policy with us and the value that they place on being able to enjoy that as part of their rural character and surrounds.
What's the total quantum of vegetation clearing that's going to take place for the project, especially, what was it, phase 3, 4, and 5, possibly 6? Yeah, phase area 5, area 6. Yeah, basically from Gidji to Clacline.
Yep, so at this stage we don't have a clearing footprint. So we've just gone through an extensive process of looking at options in terms of what the interchange configurations look like, refinements of the alignment, where I suppose parts and connectivity needs to go. The team is currently working on, I suppose, a reference design that will be used to inform that environmental referral process. So over the coming months, we will start to flesh out that environmental footprint. What we've done, and Tammy mentioned it in terms of the investigation area and the number of property holders, we've gone out and surveyed quite a wide corridor in some areas, 300 to 400 metres wide. A highway of this nature typically would take a corridor of 100 metres wide. So we've surveyed quite a wide area to understand the context, to, I suppose, identify areas where there's opportunities to minimise the footprint in terms of avoidance. But at this stage, we don't have hectares or number of trees impact in terms of what you would see, but we will have that to inform the referral. And I suppose the referral in the middle of this year is just the start of the environmental approval process. It's when we tell the regulator what the project looks like. It's not the, when we tell the regulator all the details of the project. It's just when we get a level of assessment. And then we go through probably 2 years of working with the regulator in terms of additional information, public comment period. So there will be an opportunity for the public to comment on our level of assessment, but then also on our environmental approval documents as we walk through that two-year process.
Yeah, I just wanted to know a little bit more about the Morrison Road investigation there with the grade separation. There's a lot of concern of local residents of the impact on Farrell Road, particularly through Swan View, even as far as Stratton is going to be impacted, particularly when we've had Robinson Road as well being proposed to be closed down, which doesn't have the approval of the City of Swan or Mundaring Shire. And so Clayton Street especially is going to be affected by this road closure. I would love for Main Roads to be able to have some overarching power, I suppose, to try and keep Robinson Road open, considering it is a Shire road and is being overridden by Metronet. But it's going to cause a lot of traffic congestion around the Midland area and surrounding suburbs. And I just wanted to see if there was some hope there for Morrison Road to be.
So I might start that, and either Max or Lindsay can jump in with me. But I suppose in terms of what we're doing at Morrison Road, so we are going through an opportunities of looking at connectivity and what could be provided there as an integrated project team. We have had discussions with Main Roads and different branches within Main Roads on that, and we continue to work through that. As Tammy said, by the middle of April, when we have further consultation through MySay Transport on the connectivity maps, etc., we hope to be able to release that. But at this stage, we're still investigating and going through that discussion with Main Roads on Morrison Road connectivity. So I don't know if Lindsay or Max wanted to add to that.
No, that's pretty good from the IPT standpoint. I don't know, Lindsay, do you want anything to add from a wider planning picture?
Yeah, probably the only other things I was going to add is that associated with Robinson Road, Main Roads, is there was a commitment to investigate some localised upgrades at Greaterson Highway, Lloyd Street, and Lloyd Street, Clayton Street. So that's being investigated at the moment.
Are we able to go back to slide 4?
This one?
Is that actually Great Eastern Highway or is it Guildford Road? It's actually sometimes a little bit difficult to orientate on these when you don't are not 100% familiar with the area, but I'll let that one go for the moment. Just interested in how you as an organisation actually measure your success with environmental issues, particularly in respect to like, for instance, one of the questions earlier was, you know, do you have an idea of how much vegetation will be removed? So my question is, in measuring your success in the project, do you actually have any specific measurements in place about replacement of that vegetation? Is it like for like, or is it twice as much? I'm curious about what your organisation might have in respect to measurements of success in respect to the environment.
Again, I'm happy to start. So Main Roads, I suppose as a responsible corporate citizen, will only refer to the regulators in projects that they believe are environmentally acceptable. Then it's up to the regulator to decide if the project is environmentally acceptable. In terms of our clearing areas and environmental values, whether it be, I suppose, permanent vegetation, black cockatoo habitat, all of the other environmental factors, we start with the process of avoid where we can, then mitigate, and then offset. And offset is, I suppose, the last measure. The level of offsets for those state and federal matters of environmental significance, those quantums in terms of 2-to-1 ratios, 4-to-1 ratios, they're actually determined by the regulator, not by Main Roads. So Main Roads works with the regulators in terms of coming up with an offset strategy, but Main Roads doesn't actually determine how much or where or why. It is up to the regulator, I suppose, to work through that offset strategy. But I would say from working with Main Roads on projects of similar nature for the last 15 years, it's very much avoid, mitigate, and then offset is the last one. And again, I'll pass over to the Main Roads colleagues if they want to add to that. But that's the process we go through, and we're probably at the start of that journey for this project.
So have been with the organisation for 15 years, do you have an average of what is replaced?
So no, because for certain habitat, for certain species of fauna, it is all very different and very, I suppose, project specific. So a project in the wheat belt will have a different offset, because, and that's why part of our reason for surveying a wide corridor is to understand the context. So there's not an average that you can put on any of these projects, because they're all, I suppose, particular to their local geography.
Okay, so, sorry, last question. Okay, project specific. At the end of the project, is there some sort of itemization, for lack of a better word, of what the outcomes of that project were from an environmental and sustainable point of view, in giving the community some metrics after that project is finished? I'm curious about how these, we can see if Main Roads are over a period of time beginning to actually improve the metrics of what they replace. So this is, and I do understand the projects go over very long periods of time, but I'm interested in those metrics and how the community can actually access that information.
I don't know the Main Roads reporting, but I'll ask Max or Lindsay to talk on that. And Max has signed up to talk to that, the Main Roads reporting. In terms of approvals, all of major projects like this that get state and federal approval have compliance reporting that they have to do to the regulators. So as the projects get built, they have to measure what they cleared. They have to show compliance that they didn't clear more than they got approval for. And then they also have to prove that they've achieved the offsets that they committed to. So there's very stringent compliance reporting. Maybe I'll ask Max to talk to any other Main Roads reporting.
Well, look, and I was going to mention exactly that. So for larger projects like an East Link is the largest project that Main Roads have looked at ever. I think prior to that, North Link would have been the largest, and Gateway. Those larger projects have their matrices and reporting requirements. But Main Roads also does, you know, hundreds of smaller projects all over the state. Intersection improvements and, you know, safety improvements and things like that. So I am not sure, I don't know, Lindsay, if you know, I'm not sure if there is a matrix that I can pull off the website, but I can certainly take the question on notice and we'll come back to you with that.
Okay.
It's Lindsay, the only thing I'd add, I think Warwick and Max covered it quite well, but I think Warwick covered it early in terms of the environmental review or approval process. You know, that starts with based on the reference design, a certain footprint or assumption, and obviously, as Warwick sort of outlined, that's what's going to be challenged over the next sort of a period of time, 2 to 3 years, to see what can we do to avoid, mitigate, to reduce those impacts. I don't have them on me, but Main Roads does have to report annually on sort of what the environmental impacts in extended clearing and those sort of attributes.
Another quick question.
Sorry, Councillor Dorr, I'm taking the last question.
Okay. How many trucks, freight and logistics trucks, will it actually take off Great Eastern Highway that would otherwise go through Mundaring? First question. And second question is, how many cars would be expected to use it if it does get funding eventually and is completed?
You want to go?
Yeah, look, I'll start. Orange Route, Perth Deadland National Highway, is planned as a major freight route between Northam and Perth. So a lot of the traffic that comes from the eastern states, Kalgoorlie, because this particular route will provide a much better travel path. We are talking about 100 k's an hour speed limit that's consistent, that, you know, the trucks won't have to negotiate. I think it's 14 different speed zone changes between Northam and Perth if you now currently travel along the Great Eastern, plus a set of signals in Mundaring. It will have better grades because we are looking at a flatter grades across the Red Hill in compared to what it's currently now going up and down Green Mount. Plus, this route is also being planned for 36.5-meter combinations that are currently stopping in Northam, breaking down at 27.5s, and have to run into Perth and then come back and take the last of the load. So you will have one truck movement from Northam to Perth to bring the same amount of freight versus three truck trips to bring the same amount of freight along Great Eastern now. So it will be a better road for the heavy vehicles to use. And as far as the passenger vehicles, obviously there's, you know, matters of route preference and things like that. But currently we've done some recent origin destination studies. And according to origin destination studies, around half of the vehicles that leave Northam arrive in Perth. So again, selecting this particular route that is steady speed limits, two lanes each way, so you don't have to worry about passing opportunities and things like that. Much safer design, safer curves. You will see how this road will be a draw card for both heavy and light passenger vehicles. Pork, anything you want to add?
No, that covers it. It's kind of the distribution of the change rather than numbers of the change.
Hmm. So you don't have any idea of the number of trucks, freight and logistics trucks that actually be moved off Great Eastern Highway? Onto the Orange Route, you don't have any idea of that? Basic quantum, ballpark figure?
We haven't done an analysis of the number of trucks today, a day of opening, because as I said, at this stage, we're doing all ultimate planning, and that looks at, I suppose, those forward projections. So even day of opening traffic volumes, those sort of metrics and numbers come later in this project development phase when we start to look at business case and day of opening and plus 5, plus 10. So we don't have those numbers at this stage, and that may become available later in the project.
Right. But on that note, I think we'll move on. Thank you, Lindsay, Max, Warwick, Tony, thank you very much indeed for the presentation. I think we've all learned something tonight, that we've been wanted to have a few questions, so they've been asked and the questions being given for the answers. Thank you. So thank you very much indeed.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
All good.
All right, so we'll move on. Thanks, councillors, to 9.1, which is a confirmation of the minutes of the previous meeting. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder to that. Councillor Hamilton, mover, seconder. I'm almost got on mine. Councillor Thomas, thank you. I'd like everyone to remove their masks, but we can't, and it's frustrating and horrid. Okay, no one opposed to that. We declare that all moved. Questions for my members for which due notice has been given. We don't have any questions, Mr. CEO.
That's correct.
Number 11, questions by members without notice. Are there any questions without notice?
Yes, we just had a presentation from Main Roads. Are we going to get any other groups in who may be, say, also concerned about the Orange Route, who live in the area, Rethink Eastlink or any other groups like that, to come in and present their case as well, so we hear a community perspective?
Well, I haven't had a request. So is that a request?
That's a request.
Okay, so we'll take the request on notice and see what we do with that. Yep. Thank you, Councillor Dorr. Announcements of confidential matters that be closed to the public. That is this. Oh, Councillor
Hamilton, I did have a question. Will we be given a could that presentation be sent to councillors or not?
I don't know if it's publicly available.
I will follow up with Main Roads whether it can be made available.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Righto. So number 12, announcements of confidential matters which are contained may be closed to the public. So there are a number. They'll come up in item 19. This is not dealt with from previous meeting 13. Reports by employees, there are 14, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Well, I promise to go a little bit slower for you down the back. Are there any questions on any of those items? If there are, can you please tell me the item number?
14.1, 14.4.1, 14.4.2, 14.4.5. And how far did you go? All the 14s?
Just if you can tell me again, it's all of them. So you're talking 14.1?
Yes. 14.4.1. 14.4? 4.1. Sorry, 14.4.1. 14.4. Thank you. Yes, all of those.
Sorry.
Okay, right. My bad.
And was it 14.5 you said as well?
No.
14.6? 14.7.
And
14.8.
Oh, well, it's kind of a hanging sustainability team update. You can number it however you like.
Okay, so can we, well, two of the reports of the employees, if I may, please.
Thank you.
All right, so questions on 14.1.
Thank you. I note that this report contains the financial reports from November, December and January, and I just... My recollection is that the reports need to be presented every 2 months. I'm just wondering, obviously with the timing of meetings that didn't happen, but I'm just wondering how we deal with this in future.
See ya.
Through the chair, if I may. Yes, Councillor Johnson is correct. Immediately when the meeting is as required, we need to present the list of delegated payments. But accordingly, the last that we did was back in November, and we had a break of 3 months, and that's why this corresponds with the 3 months as well in this case.
I understand that. Sorry. I understood under the Local Government Act we had to see them within 2 months.
That's correct. But we have had discussions with the auditors in regards to this as well. They have brought this up in the past, but because of practical reasons, because our meeting schedule is the fourth week of each month, and obviously in December we have Christmas break over that period, and January is traditionally our recess period.
Oh, thank you.
14.4.
Thank you. It was 14.1.4. My apologies. I'll just have to flick through to the questions. So bear with me for one moment, please. Okay. So I note on page, oh gosh, we've got page numbers.
Yep.
Sorry, presumably the page numbers.
Anyway, in the commentary on this report under the operational expenditure variances, point 17, it says our year-to-date salary expenses are below budget by 11.5%. It says this relates to budgeted positions yet to be filled and unfilled vacant positions. I'm wondering if there's a plan to fill, or if we can have an update on what's happening there, if there's a plan to fill those positions or what's happened.
So, CEO.
Thank you. Through the chair, most of them are because of delays of projects, for example, the wood waste to energy. So we haven't recruited because there wasn't a requirement. Also, it's difficult to get staff, and you'll see that actually the contracts labor is up. So there's a bit of an offset there. But we're definitely under budget for salaries year to date.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Yep.
Also, it kind of relates to the update in the corporate business plan, but I know there's a workplace plan, or workforce plan, sorry, that's being developed. Does that affect staffing numbers at this point?
To see you.
Actually, we have the HR manager here. Angela, can you?
The current workforce plan is actually more or sort of centered around strategy rather than actually fulfillment of sort of particular vacancies. So it's much more of a strategic document rather than operational one.
Thank you for that. I just wondered if those things were related at all. Given that there are a number of changes, are we anticipating a mid-year budget review at some point?
Yes, that's actually scheduled for next week to the audit committee. So we've performed a mid-year review and the results will be made available next meeting of the audit committee.
Terrific. Thank you. Can I ask, please, about item 24 on the same page? It talks about the construction of the Class 3 Stage 16 cell being a little bit behind schedule on account of the weather and other factors. I know it has been completed, and I think in the corporate business plan it said it was completed in December. I'm just wondering if that project was on budget, under budget, over budget in the end?
No, it's under budget. And the delay was because of material issues, with the quality issues with the material. So that was carried by the contractor, but we missed the slot in winter to finish the job, so that's where it was carried over, but it was under budget.
Yeah, because it looks under budget by a lot here, which sounds extraordinary. So good work. Are we needing also to do a sort of a CapEx carry forward update? Is that also happening in the audit committee?
That's correct.
Sorry, 14 point. The next one's my apologies.
Are we going to 14.7 now?
Sure.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mark up my questions appropriately. Oh, sorry, can I ask another one on 14.4, I think it was, on the investment report page. Sorry, I think it's 99. We have around 17% of our investments in non-fossil fuel deposits. I'm just wondering if that's less than in previous reports.
Mr. CFO.
True to chair, per the policy, when we each time we review our investment at that point in time, we provide a preference to the non-fossil fuel. But over the last 2 years in particular, there has been a push towards quality stocks in the big four banks, and they have been giving preferential rates. That's why there's a shift away from that. So it was not a deliberate, it was following the policy that we have.
Okay, so there's no need to review the policy. It's just the better rates are being offered.
That's correct.
All right. Okay, thank you. Thank you, 14.7. Okay. The waste tonnage reports. Is that the time to ask me this question? Looks like there was a drop-off in FOGO around Christmas time, which was surprising. I'm just wondering if that's correct or if you have any commentary on any insight into that, please. That would be on page 164.
Through the chair, no, I don't have an explanation.
Take it on notice.
Take it on notice and we'll get back to you.
Okay.
So is that the end of the questions?
I think so. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions? Councillor Trittini.
Yes, page 50, 14.2.1, just has here that we sell assets, $351,000. What is that? What do we sell?
CFO?
Through the chair, the assets are part of the plan replacement, including vehicles. So when it comes up to the due, say, for example, in the vehicles, we have a policy, our fleet policy, and that's the optimum time, and we have a replacement program, and that's the time we do sell those assets. So.
And also page 52, 14.2.2, capital improvement administration building, forecast. What are we planning there?
Yes, oh, so through the chair. So we've actually planned to upgrade the toilets because the last renovation was about 12 years ago. But we've put all of that on hold. So we're just doing maintenance now and we haven't done any major refurbishments. That's why we have zero actual spend year to date.
That's this building.
Yeah, this building,
correct. Correct.
Yes.
Okay. All right. No further questions. Then I would ask if someone will move and second on block. Councillor McWilliam and Councillor Johnson seconded. Is there anyone against? Declare all those carried. Thank you. Yes, I'm getting there. Reports of committees. I think it was a question, Councillor Johnson, you had. Was it on committees on 15?
No, thank you.
No, you're okay. So 15.1 is a legal committee meet held on the 25th of November 2021. I invite someone to move and second those. Well, there's a few of us on the legal committee. So 15.1.
Just a point, if I may, in regards to that, we've got a confidential item here on the legal committee. Is that the one we're looking at right now, or is that something else? No. Okay, so it's got two numbers on here. It's got item 15.1, it's got item 19.3. I mean,
19.3.
That's very confusing, though. Why don't we ever have it just a one singular number?
I think we've had this discussion a few times. We've had this
discussion before. I'm wondering why the reason is we have to keep going with two different sets of numbers, which can confuse people.
Right, through the chair, if I may, with regards to the reports of committee in particular with this legal committee, there are items that is confidential. The legal committee has delegated authority, so it's gone through in terms of their resolution. But for the purpose of the any minutes of committees, including the confidential report, has to come back to the council. So in terms of your question with regards to the confidential report, there is a numbering that goes by the committee itself. And that committee, when it comes here, it becomes this item under section item 19, and that's why. So the numbering itself for the legal committee, so if you read it, item 19.3, and then look at the reference to the legal committee, and then it says item 15.1 of the legal committee, and that's how that's actually the nomenclature for this referencing. So for the purpose of this section, the report of the committees is just the general shell itself that's asked for the council before the council for approval and noting.
Are we going to deal with this now?
Yeah. The chair. So these are just the minutes, but the confidential item has been lifted out. So these are just the minutes, the election of the chair and the deputy chair and a resolution.
So, you want to, Councillor Zanina moved. Seconded, Councillor Hamilton. Is anyone against? Moving on, 16.1, Municipal Waste Advisory Council. Question there?
No, thank you, through the chair. I'll just say that I was at that meeting, and one of the questions raised was about the report from, I think, the Waste Authority that talked about 30% of metropolitan waste being diverted, and it seems to be that it's really unclear about where our waste is going and how the data is being collected. It seems like there's waste vanishing into a hole somewhere. So I'm not sure that I really have very little faith in some of the numbers sometimes about diversion and waste tonnages across the broader metro area, not in our own organisation, of course, but more broadly.
Through the chair, I can. It actually has been noted anecdotally. This is in the annual reports of the Waste Authority of the last 3 years that 800,000 tonnes is missing, and it's the majority is construction and demolition waste. And it's believed that actually that goes to landfills outside the metro area, the leakage of the waste levy, but it's not municipal solid waste as such. And just as a note, Councillor Johnson actually was elected the deputy chair of the MWAC committee.
Congratulations. Yeah. You don't seem too excited. We've got a half baked around the horse.
It's really way over the top for the position, but thank you.
Yeah, you'll be doing this. It's another committee. All right, so we're on to 17 now, which is the notice of motion received from Councillor Thomas. Councillor Thomas.
This motion is quite clear. We're in the business of Hazelmere, Redhill and East Rockingham, all of which require us to wear special boots, steel cap boots and vests, etc., etc. So I think it's really appropriate that every councillor can get those things and be and get the money for them. The boots we all have to have separately. The other things like the vest they can hand out on the day, which they did at East Rockingham, and the glasses. So whether we get those for just the EMRC and use them as we do, but the boots need to be separate. So I ask you to support this motion.
I have a seconder. Councillor Sewell, all right. I think you've already jumped into the debate. So do you want to, we're okay. So second, do you want to speak? No, okay. Do we put it to the vote?
Can I speak against that one, please?
Sorry, you're against? Do you want to enter into debate?
Sure, thank you.
No, I just think I'll get the mover to actually go through the right process. So over to you. Thank you. So if you can just repeat again, would you mind, so we get the format right? I can't let you go on beforehand and enter into the debate before we got the seconder. So.
Sorry. You've got a copy of the motion. We're required to do site visits, or we want to do site visits because that's what we're in the business of. And each of those site visits require us to wear certain things for all the PPA, occupational health and safety requirements, and I think it's appropriate that we are reimbursed for the expenditure of them, particularly the boots, which have to be individual, whereas the other things like the vest, the glasses could be used again and we could share those.
Thank you. And Councillor Sewell said they're not going to talk as a seconder. So Councillor Johnson, so those for, those against? Councillor Johnson. Other question, sorry.
Perhaps this should be directed to the CEO. If this was supported by council, I'm assuming there would have to be some guidelines put in place about councillors submitting their receipts and what have you within a certain timeline. All these things would have to be associated with this, correct?
That's correct. And I think the whole gist of it is that we would write it into a policy or a guideline. And obviously, once you get a pair of boots at the beginning of the term, then that's the pair of boots you'll have for the rest of the term. But yes, so we'll write the guidelines and write that.
Okay. Is anyone against? Questions?
My experience when you such things in relation to whether you undertake a matter of tax.
I can't hear.
Is it not simply a matter of a tax deduction?
I can't hear.
Sorry.
There you go. Is it not simply a matter of applying for a tax deduction?
Sorry, you're asking through the chair that.
Yeah.
That if a member wants to go and buy this, they can then buy it and then claim a tax deduction against their stipendary or.
Yeah, I'm asking a question whether that's possible.
Well, I guess you could.
Yes.
It's very dependent. You can get 30%.
I guess you could.
Could, if say you're in the 30% bracket and run it up, you'll get the 30% of the revenue.
Yeah, I said so. A portion back is not the full entitlement. So, Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. Councillors are paid to be on their own local council, and councillors are paid to be, generously, in my view, to be at this council, although I know it's a shed load of work. So I think it's sufficient to cover the cost of a pair of boots. If you haven't got one, it's a good idea to get one so you can slosh around in the mud anytime you like.
Is there a question?
It's a point, just a point of clarity that deputies actually aren't paid to be here and to attend.
Sorry, through the chair. Deputy councillors are paid per meeting. So if you're attending, say, for example, a site visit, no, you're not paid for those ones. But for a meeting itself and committee meetings, you are paid.
Anyone for the motion?
Just a question, if I may. Basically, you're saying in the Office of Comments that the out-of-pocket expenses can be covered, but this is not usually what you'd expect in the form of an out-of-pocket expense, a pair of boots to visit a site. So was that mandatory to have a pair of steel cap boots for the recent site visit?
Was
that
yes, it was. Yes.
Okay, good.
Okay.
So, again, directing this at the CEO, do we have a policy for out-of-pocket expenses for the councillors? Do we have one that exists already?
Through the chair, we do in for travel expenses and say, for example, attendance of conferences where there are expenditures and expenditures that are incurred, that we do. But this is very specific, something new. So as per the Local Government Act, we do have to get an instruction from council first to approve generally, and then we can draft up the policy to match what's required.
Is there anyone for the motion? Anyone against the motion? And I'll speak for the motion. This is a conversation, councillors, that I had when I was asked to attend the East Rockingham waste facility. And I was requested that I actually wasn't requested, it was directed that I wore boots, safety boots, and the other equipment they would supply on site. I said to our CFO, I don't have a pair of safety boots. I've never owned a pair of safety boots. I've never worn a pair of safety boots. And if I go and buy a pair of safety boots, they will probably sit in the cupboard. So why would I be expected to go and buy a pair of safety boots? And whether it's $45 or $65 or $80, why should I do that when I've been directed to wear them to a facility? And I'd further make comment that when we go down to a lot of our waste to energy, wood waste to energy, other stuff going on at Hazelmere and at Red Hill, it will be a requirement to wear them. Now, I'm not suggesting everybody races out and buys gold boots. I think everyone can share their respect. If you already have safety boots, you're not going to look at buying another pair, I wouldn't think. Two pairs of safety boots is probably what you don't need in the cupboard. So I don't mind that we're talking about an expense here is so minimal. And so those who have safety boots, I'm sure probably wouldn't go and buy another pair. But if you don't have them, why would you be asked to pay for them yourself? The other option is for the EMRC to buy a whole bunch of safety boots and store them at the EMRC and have them distributed to feet size when we're asked to go and visit one of these facilities. And I think that's inappropriate and we shouldn't be doing that. So all the other PPP is usually supplied on site, which is the jackets, the glasses and the hard hat. So it really is drilling down to probably just hard boots. So I'm going to support it. Okay, so I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? And that would be everybody except Councillor Johnson. We can note that. Thank you. Motion carried. 19, confidential matters of which a meeting may be closed to the public. There are a number of items that we're going to discuss on 19. So we need someone to move, go behind closed doors. Councillor Hamilton, seconded by Councillor Sewell. All right, we need to shut the doors, kick out the public.